Yes, always.
Jess, are you able to hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Sure can. While we're waiting here, because I had told Liz I'd start everything up at 11:45, but I received an email. Well, I had reached out to Drew Kuick. I'm not sure if I say his name right. He's our diversity rep. And he'd been out for a little while, and then had come back to Diversey. And I know that he works with Rebecca. And they were wondering about potentially helping sponsor something like lunch or something otherwise if their table is free for their setup. But I was like, I will defer to the conference organizers, and I was like, but I will have somebody reach out to him. So,
Wonderful. Do you want to send me an email and I'll make sure Rebecca and I actually are meeting maybe later next week. But yes, we did approve to be able if they were sponsoring a speaker or those type of things, they
perfect.
had
Because,
a free vendor too.
okay, because he said something about looking for additional funds or checking to see if they could use additional funds then if they're not having to pay for their table. I'm like, I will let those ladies, since I know the other Rebecca. So, okay, perfect.
Perfect.
I will respond that to him, and then
No
I
problem.
will send you guys his email and contact info.
Okay, sounds great.
Great. Liz, do you have capability to run the meeting?
Do you hear me?
Sure can. You're a little bit light, but I can hear you.
Okay, what about now?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I do. Yes. So my plan is to just run the PowerPoint. You're going to hit record. I am adding a couple of things in the chat. And yeah, can you all see the PowerPoint?
Yes, I can see your
Wonderful.
PowerPoint.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
Okay, great. So far we're set. And were you planning on introducing everything once we get going at 12?
Yes, unless you would like to, Bunny. If you
No.
want to, that's fine with me.
No. You are fantastic at it, and I am a good listener.
Did you send out that email, the email from yesterday?
I did send out the email.
Oh my gosh. I have to tell you, I was in a total slump, like just doing end of year, fiscal year stuff and, putting out fires. And I got that email and it was the best. It was just so funny. I just started laughing and then I stopped and I read it all. So I thought that was perfect.
Well, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I would like, I mean, we get so many emails in a day. I mean, all of us. And so it's like, how can it
Well,
be
that one got
funny?
my
Well,
attention. It was
good.
the best.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted. And then I thought, how can it be an attention grabber and then also be kind of funny, but also be accurate?
Right. No,
Good.
it was wonderful.
Good, good. Okay. Can I verify? Can you guys hear me? Perfect.
Yep.
Oh, and I didn't look, Liz. At last glance, there had been like 15 people that had registered. So
Okay.
hopefully we capture some. I know our nursing home is in our open window and for survey. And I know that ULC down the road has some surveyors. So not that they'll probably come knocking on our door anyway this week yet,
Right.
but I was hoping that Angie Hootie, I didn't see if she got a chance to sign up or not, but she had inquired the other week about it, and then I told her, reminded her to log on today. So I
I'm
don't
here.
know.
Can you hear me?
Hey, Angie, yay!
Yep, even though we've got surveyors, I'm still on.
Good. No, that's terrific. I'm so glad. I was actually bummed out because I was worried that they were going to be there and then you weren't going to have a chance to be logged in. So
Nope, I made it. So
awesome.
hopefully I can sit through the whole thing.
Sweet. Well, don't send them over our way. Don't, you just keep them there. Oh,
Well, I mean, this is day two, so I don't
yeah. They're not
know.
coming over to the neighborhoods. No. They'll be
No, they're not going to start on Friday, so.
cool. Who knows? Who
Well,
knows?
I know you say that then, right? Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, I kind of liked it during COVID when they would only send their one infection preventionist to just do the infection prevention only.
Oh, for like the outbreak ones when they had those?
Well,
Yeah.
not even, it wasn't even outbreak. It was right away, kind of when COVID started. They would send one person from long or for long-term care. And they would go over your COVID stuff, but not, and then they'd still look around, but just making sure that everything was still good and that you're following all the COVID rules. But it was kind of nice just having one.
I know, but we did really pretty good through COVID. That I do remember, so
Good.
maybe that's why I stick to the remembering the surveys from when there would be an outbreak because they always had to come if there were more than two, And at that time, you never had the luxury. If you had one, you were going to have more than two.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to log on today.
Yeah, thanks.
So I'm told that in years past, after they leave ULC, they tend to like to come see us. So we may get them next week and you guys may all be safe, which we're ready. Like, let's just get it over with. I'm sick of waiting.
So Jess, you're going to give me the heads up then, because it's like they bounce to you guys, to us, or to ULC if they're going to be in this area.
Okay. I will send out.
And yeah, sometimes it's just nice to get it done, but
I always tell people if you live ready, you don't have to get ready.
that's right. I just know, and I know it's probably the same for you guys with the amount of SDSU students that are awesome CNAs for us, but then there's that turnover always in the winter when they graduate and in the spring when they graduate. And so it feels like we just have a new crop of CNAs and not sure they're, I feel 100% accurate on their best EBP knowledge. So,
If people don't have EBP down here, I just think it needs to go straight to a write-up. That's all I've been talking about since I came back over a year.
yeah, it's so tough. And like I said, just that new crop. And I feel like no matter how much education we provide and demonstrations I provide, it's like, I swear there's always one of them that's like, what? I've never heard of this.
I've been incorporating it into every skills competency that we do. And then if they don't make it to the competency, they still have to do it with me.
For sure.
Yeah.
I
And
just had
the
a CNA get upset with me because she didn't know she had to wear it while changing linens. I'm like, how did you not know? We've been over this. It's on the, the sign. Like, I don't know how you missed it. And it's just so frustrating.
It is.
That's just
Yeah.
the go-to. Oh, I didn't realize, or I didn't know it was for that too. Or, yeah. Then they get, they don't like it.
My father-in-law recently had to have a catheter after his stroke 10 years ago. So he recently had to have a catheter, and he was tattling on the facility that he's at in Sioux Falls.
Love
I was like, well, don't tattle to me.
it's advocating. It's not
That,
tattling, it's
that's
advocating.
good point, Liz. Good point. And I was like, bro, I am not at work. I do not work here. But like, tell anybody else but me.
It's good to know, right? Like,
Right.
I'm sure the hospital would love that feedback. The real-time feedback is like the best. I started having our leads start doing the hand hygiene audits. Yeah, it's not the same as when they see me around.
No, it's very helpful to have secret shoppers that have been trained. Yep.
Yep. So they'll end up figuring out that they're not secret shoppers. I mean, we're only so big, but it's working right now anyway.
So I had seen on like the APIC forum that state frowned upon secret shoppers because they're not getting real-time feedback. And I've always been told secret shoppers are a good thing. So, and of course, it wouldn't give information on where or what. So I couldn't get more info on it. But now that's in the back of my mind.
Yeah,
Sure.
that is interesting.
How else, I mean, do you do it though? I mean, we get like 500 observations a quarter, and I don't know how else you would be able to do it other than like secret shoppers. Because if they're walking, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. Like, I tell my people, like, please, give feedback, say, like, hey, I noticed you didn't do hand hygiene. How come you didn't? But you can't always do that. And if you're walking around with the clipboard, everyone's doing what they can, have to do. So
Right.
you can't have it both ways.
Right.
I totally agree, Liz. And having a health system, I don't know how I would be in every single spot all the
Right.
time. Yeah.
Right. I've always
Recording in
Oops,
progress.
sorry. Sorry about that. Hit a button.
That's okay. I'm actually going to, unfortunately, stifle the awesome conversation that we're having. So that we can talk about prepping. But I will let Liz take it away as soon as I hit record here in a moment.
Good job, Bunny. Okay. Are we recording? I think it says record.
I was gonna say it's auto recording, but
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Today we are going to talk about certification. We're going to talk about CBIC certification readiness. There are several members of the APIC South Dakota Board of Directors that will be talking about this and going through different parts of the journey that is certification. All right, so did it change here? There we go. Preparation. So we want to just start with preparation. The first part of this is to go to the CBIC website. There is just an absolute plethora of sheets and worksheets and information resources on the website. This is if you are getting your CIC, which is the baseline certification in infection control. That is again really the baseline that you need that shows that you have infection prevention knowledge and are an expert in your skill. If you are looking at a long-term care certification in infection prevention, which is for long-term care facilities, they also have the AIPC, which is an associate
infection prevention and control expert. That really is for an it's an entry level. It measures basic infection prevention related knowledge. And then we also have the ALCIP, which is an advanced leadership certification in infection prevention. This is for individuals who demonstrate professional expertise, leadership, and impact in the field of infection prevention and control. I really think of these people who have worked in infection prevention for many years. That's not always the case. This is really a portfolio-based certification, and not necessarily a test like the other ones are. There are candidate handbooks for each of those different certifications, and those are updated yearly. They are incredibly helpful going through each part of the certification journey. And then there are also outlines available for each of those that walk you through the different areas of studies that people will need to look at. And then the other thing that was very helpful in my facility was under Y Certified, there are a lot of resources that help you when you're bringing this back to your facility and asking them to allow you time to do this, resources, asking them to pay for it. And it really helps. There's a letter that you can access that really helps you ask your facility to support you in your civic journey. So very important part of that. All right, this is a very overwhelming PowerPoint. I guess this slide is very overwhelming. You very, very much unlikely do not own all of these books. However, because the certification really looks at a wide range of different subjects, these are resources that are very, very helpful in your journey to getting certified. So, for instance, the certification study guide, I think we're probably going to all touch on this, but this is one where I purchased this, and in the back of it, there was a study test. And what I did was I made copies of that study test and did them over and over and over again while I was studying just to see, okay, what am I not getting right? What do I need to focus on more? I probably took that darn test, five or six times. It is a wonderful guide to help you while you're studying. The Ready Reference for Microbes, that's one that I literally still use to this day. If I have a culture and it is culturing something funky that I am not very familiar with, I will grab my Ready Reference for Microbes and I will look it up and see what that organism is. So there's many other ones. Infection Prevention Guides to the Lab, statistics. If statistics wasn't a high point in your college career there, that statistics book is a really good one. The Red Book is another one that I, especially with measles right now, that I got out and I always am looking at. I have a bunch of pages tabulated in there. In addition, Sherry Fass shared a couple of helpful study resources here that she found. I have also added those to the chat. So hopefully you are able to access those and able to look at those while if you are considering getting certified. AORN, the e-guidelines, that's one, especially if you don't have a lot to do or you don't have a surgery, you will get questions even if your facility doesn't have certain departments. I'm not under, I'm not within employee health, but I still got employee health related questions. So it is always good to have these resources. This is also another really nice thing if you can buddy up with others who are studying for their certification, because you may not have a book and they may, and you be may be able to trade with somebody and look at it and study with their book. So resources that are available to you. There are many more. When you are ready to apply, there is an online application that needs to be completed. You will create a profile within Civic and then you will fill out an online application. There are exam fees that are necessary for each of the different certifications that you may take. And then there is a Prometric experience. So there's an appointment necessary. Now, there was a question that we had while we were preparing this, if some of those exams you can actually take in, from home. Within the website, I was not able to find that for myself, but that may be an opportunity. The thing to remember is that once you go in, fill out the application, pay the fee, you have a 90-day window to schedule that exam. So, winter weather, depending on when you're doing it, just be aware of that. You have a 3-month window. When you take your exam, you have a 3-hour window to take that exam at a Prometric facility, and you might need to travel. Again, there may be some availability to take that from home. Again, I was not able to find that, but that is a possibility. In South Dakota right now, within our APIC chapter, we have 25 people who are certified in infection control. We have 21 people who have their long-term care CIC. There are two that have their associate IPC, and there are two with their advanced leadership, which is really wonderful that for the state of South Dakota. We have a lot of people who have a lot of knowledge and understanding, but certainly have room for more people to apply and get certified. Leah Bomsberger, who is one of our board members, was not able to be with us today. She just took her CIC in May, I believe, and passed, which I had no doubt that she would pass. But these were her study tips that she shared with us. Her big thing was about procrastination, and she did not even start studying until she had that exam on the calendar. That was her mark to start. So she just picked a date that worked for her schedule. She scheduled the exam, and then she really started studying. She's worked in infection prevention for many years. She's worked with the state. So obviously she had a ton of knowledge going into it, but that for her was very, very helpful. She mapped out that schedule exams, looking at that content each week. So, this week she would take employee health, next week she would take surveillance, the week after that she would look at outbreaks, and she studied all of the 8 categories, and we're going to go over those categories here in a little bit within that 3-month period. This book right here that I have down on the right, the Control of Communicable Diseases Manual, was very, very helpful to her. This was one of the resources that she really highly recommends. And just within infection prevention, when you're working, it will cover epidemiology, infection control measures, and all sorts of different things. She really said that she continues to use this, within her job. She utilized the certification study guide, again, doing as many exams as possible to get a feel for the test and questions, figuring out the layout, the wording. This, for those of us that have nursing as our background, this takes us back to the NCLEX, where you say, well, geez, these are all right, but which one is the most right? Which can be very anxiety inducing, but that's also an important part of it, is really reading that question and figuring out what they're asking. And then she says, there's just so much content. She used the assessment guide at the end of each practice exam to evaluate which areas that she was the weakest. And then she would dive into that content and really help her focus that. There are YouTube videos on specific content material. And then again, the book that really assisted her. All right, Sheila, share about the study group.
Hello, I am Sheila Pitts. I work in a small critical access hospital in Clear Lake, South Dakota, and I am actually just starting the process of studying for my CIC certification as well. We actually have our first actual study group tomorrow. So some of the things that Sarah, who is also on this call, has set up is she sent out to our group a like the practice tests for a chapter. And then kind of the same materials that Elizabeth had shared for the CBIC book and the contents and kind of the get looking through it. And yeah, so that's really kind of where we're starting is just each month. We're going to trial and error tomorrow, but practice through these practice tests, learn from each other's. We'll have an open discussion if there's areas that we're all struggling in on while we're studying. We share the resources that we all get. So that's kind of where it is. It was kind of interesting. I've been doing infection prevention here for probably almost 8 years now. And going through the first practice test, I was like, oh, this will be a piece of cake without even opening my book. Yeah, it was good for me. So I kind of like Leah's idea of setting a goal and doing it in that time frame. But yes, we are using the study guides, the study tests, bouncing questions off of each other. I see in the chat that there is a question about joining the study group by a couple people. Currently, this is kind of a Sanford thing that we just started internally. So if you work for Sanford, yes, please look us up and we can get you into our study group. But I, as for expanding that outside of Sanford right now, I'm not sure. I could follow up with Sarah after the call for that. But yeah, that's kind of what we are doing. Like I said, our first meet and greet and study group thing tomorrow is tomorrow. So looking forward to that and see what where it goes from there. But we did kind of set a goal to test out. I think we set it end of the year. I don't know if that was this year or next year. I don't want to quote on that. I'm hoping it's this year because I think we focus on it and get it done. But we'll go from tomorrow and see how that goes.
Thank you, Sheila. And yes, please, if you are interested in a study group, put it into the chat. And what we will do as a chapter is we will try to get everybody who's interested in a study group together, and then you folks can get a group together to work together. So I agree. I think study groups are such a great way to share resources and collaborate. So if you're not a Sanford employee and you want to be part of a study group, put your name into the chat, and we'll help coordinate that for you. All right. Thank you, Sheila. All right. Next, we have Sherry Fass and Jess Danko, and they're going to kind of take us through how they studied.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sherry. Kind of interesting. I actually have all of the certifications from CIVIC. I started out just a brief story here. I started out with I took my CIC and I didn't pass. And I was not prepared for it. I didn't study. I just wanted to see what I knew and I didn't pass it. So then I went and took the AIPC test, passed that a few months later, took the CIC again because I really wanted to have that. And I studied a little bit differently and got that. So then they came out with the long-term care certification. And the only reason I really took that is so that I could help others know what it was about and how to study. So in the long-term care, they have a manual, and I would recommend that you get that manual. You look it through, read it. It's really not that hard. I think I read that whole book. I just dedicated a weekend and really bared down and studied that weekend. Already had my test scheduled. And the sections that Jess and I actually, and L Lisa Ham, we all took it basically the same time. Really pay attention to the chapter on the pets. That was when I took it. It was during COVID, and I felt like that was going to be a big area just because we needed some interaction with our long-term care and how are we going to stimulate our residents and that kind of thing. And there was a lot of test questions on pets. I remember one specifically talked about bird droppings on the roof and what dangers that poses as an infection preventionist. So just really cue into that pet section. They also talked about the surveillance and process and outcome measures, and then know the difference between what are regulatory agencies and guidance facility. So those are the things that I remember about the test. Very doable. I know we have a lot of long-term care certifications now since then. So congrats to all of you that have taken that. I'll turn it over to Jess to see what she has to add.
Thank you. I will just echo what Sherry said. That infection prevention guide for the long-term care manual is what I utilize to study completely in its entirety. One thing I will really highlight is throughout the book, there are a lot of tables with information. I feel like there were several test questions that came from the tables in the book. There's even a section that's in a table for the pet section. Going into it, Sherry and I both really said, make sure you pay attention to that pet section, and switch one I didn't study very well, the pet section. So pay attention to that. There were, I recall, several questions on my test. I don't know if they're exactly all the same. I don't believe they are, but there were on my test a couple pet questions. So that's definitely an area to highlight. The one also will say, once you schedule your test, it really gives you a date to, I have to be ready, I have to get this done. And for some of us, perhaps like myself, it's was the last before and cramming and reading the book to get it done. So if that's, and that's your pressure going, then get it scheduled and get a date on the calendar so you can get it taken. Those are probably, see, I would have to share, read that book in entirety. That'll be very, very helpful for you.
And I would agree, this book is the only one that I really used for the long-term care. I didn't look much outside of that book for the long-term care one. All right, so we're going to talk about the ALCIP exam now. It's not actually an exam, it's a portfolio. So I was one of the few in South Dakota that actually took this, and Jess also took this one. I'll give you a little bit of background. So the ALCIP is more of a leadership role. So it is portfolio based, and looking back, it's what have you done over the last, few years in infection control. This is a difficult one to talk about because the process was very cumbersome at first. Being where this was a new certification, there wasn't a lot of guidance in how to submit your portfolio. So it was kind of, I don't know if I'll get it or not, but I'm going to try. So for me, this certification was done more to represent a milestone in my professional journey, and it validated my confidence and my ability to lead and make some improvements in infection control. So it's not just a credential or having more letters behind my name, but it really looks at continuous learning and how we can make a difference in infection control throughout the year or throughout your career. There's two domains. Well, I'll let Jess talk about why she chose to take it, and then we can talk about how it's actually set up.
You know, thanks, Sherry, for letting me jump in here. Really, when I was trying to decide if I was going to do it or not, I was really uncertain. I didn't know or feel like maybe I had some of the qualifications that were outlined in the requirements or the suggestions that are included from Civic. But as I thought about it and as I started to get a going with it, you'll be surprised when you think back to what you've done and the work you've had in the past. Really, your contributions that you had just across the continuum of work that's been infection control. And maybe some of it wasn't even necessarily when your role was infection control. Some of the stuff that I submitted, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, really was work that I did in the respiratory therapy, but it absolutely correlates and relates to infection control. So just keep that in mind. A couple other things, they want you to use evidence that's been within the last 10 years. So if you've been in an IP for 20 or 30 years, just keep it in mind if you're going to submit this, if you're considering going into start your portfolio to get the assessment ready, that the last 10 years is the work that you can utilize for evidence. Really, having this just spoke to my commitment to the infection control world and the past experience that I have had with it, and really being able to show that I am a leader and working through and providing education and resources, those type of things across the state and most recently across the nation, which was exciting. So those were kind of my reasons. I just wanted to have that ability to say, yep, I know I've have done a lot of work, but this confirms it and really shows my background. Sherry, do you want to talk about the domains or would you like?
Yep. So when they set this up, there's two domains. First of all, if you guys could put in chat how many are thinking of being certified or what certification are you thinking, that might help us with some questions as we go along. Might be fun to know who's thinking about doing your CIC or your long-term care or even the ALCIP. And I know Jess and I, if we're talking ALCIP, we're more than happy to help you with questions you might have. Because not everybody that submitted a portfolio was granted this certification. So we heard at the APIC conference there were some people that did not get it, and I was actually surprised. So it must have been in their rationale that they didn't put in there what they were looking for. So there's two domains, and they're set up into leadership and professionalism. And you can go to the next slide, Lee. Okay. So in those domains, they're broken down into sub-competencies then. And so the first one is leadership, and they call it practice and innovation. And you have to show proof and evidence for two of these four. And I'm going to share with you the two that I used and how I kind of set mine up. So I chose strategic vision and innovation and creativity. And in strategic vision, first of all, I'm going to say when I set up my portfolio, I began looking back at all of the work that I've done in infection prevention throughout the last 15 to 20 years. And that started with me getting my certification in wound and ostomy and continence. And I set up a program at our local critical access hospital. And when I was doing that and doing wound care, there was so much that was infection related that that's really what drove me to get into this. So I started gathering all the evidence and documentation that I would have of different projects I've worked on. And I kept going back through those projects and thinking about where do they fit and what do I have proof that I actually did? Because you have to submit proof of what you did. And then the other thing is I kept going back through and looking at it with leadership eyes. Like, how does this show my leadership? How does this show what I actually did? So I set my portfolio up with a few key tabs. So I had leadership as a heading. I had strategic vision. I had my motivation because they want to know why you chose a project. What did you do? Why was that important to you? So that's pretty important to talk about. So strategic vision, I used as my example. I helped write the South Dakota Healthcare Associated Infections Action Plan. And so I used that as part of my evidence that I submitted. And I talked a lot about in my rationale about why it was important, the work that I did, how we collaborated. At that time, I was not working for the Department of Health, was working for a contracted agency. And so I talked a lot about how we collaborated and worked together to identify needs throughout the state. Didn't always talk about all the successes. We had some failures along the way, so I addressed those as well. So that was my example for that. And then innovation and creativity. When I started, I used Project Firstline. We had to do a learning needs assessment, and we were pretty creative in how we reached different organizations and healthcare providers throughout the state. And so that's what I used for that. Jess, do you want to talk about yours?
Absolutely. For practice and innovation, I also used strategic vision and then the innovation and creativity. For the strategic vision, I highlighted the APIC text that I was fortunate to co-author on the respiratory care services. So really talked about that, and then intertwined in there, not only that work, but some positions that were related to respiratory and infection control, such as being on the APIC South Dakota planning committee and helping with that to really drive forward some of the work that's happening in South Dakota with APIC overall. The other item that I had utilized, I just got to check so I don't tell you wrong. When you get in here and you start working on these, I will tell you, you may have several of them that you feel like fit into a domain, and it's really what evidence are you going to utilize to support that makes sense and really aligns with what it's asking for. So keep that in mind. When you read the description of each of these, really keep that in mind. What aligns thoroughly with what it's asking? Maybe that APIC chapter that I wrote would have fit into two or three categories, but consider where did it best fit? That's just probably one of the little tidbits, pieces of advice that I can give you guys. If you're considering this, I really could have fit this in a couple areas, and the examples of being with the APIC board and those type of things in a couple areas. But all said and done, this is where it felt like it fit the best. The other one that I had done was talking about also Project First Line, which Sherry talked about the learning needs assessment, but I really talked about how we worked with and met diverse populations through Project First Line. So yes, maybe we came and did an ICAR at a facility and provided training and education, but it didn't stop there. We also went a little bit further and customized that to maybe hit the environmental services team. So that's the work that I highlighted for the innovation and creativity on this section.
Next slide. We hope that you guys find these helpful. If we just give you some examples of what we did, we thought that would be best to go through. So in this section of it was change management and quality, and you have to choose two of four of these, and in advocacy, you have one of two, so you get your choice. So for me, the change management, I used, what did I use? Let's see, I used quality improvement for one, and then risk assessment and reduction. And I talked a lot about our work with ICARS and the populations that we worked with. I talked about how we wrote the report, all the steps involved from scheduling to reviewing policies to making the on-site visit to all of the things that go into that. Till we complete the process and then even follow up later. So that was what I used for that one. And then in quality improvement, I used a project that I worked on a long time ago, probably 10 years ago, where we worked with a community to reduce their antibiotic prescribing. And that was very successful. I used a lot of, in my rationale and my description, I used a lot of the, PDSA role and talked about a lot of measures, outcomes. I used numbers, rationale, how we de derived at what we did, and all the steps involved in that PDSA cycle. And then under advocacy, I got to look here what I did. Oh, so in advocacy, although I had things like Jess said that could have fit many categories, I tried to use different ones. You can reuse a couple of them. I think you can reuse them three times, if I'm not mistaken. But I used one, we're developing a statewide antibiotic stewardship coalition. We had that going a while ago. When COVID hit, it kind of fell apart, and we're getting that going again. And we made a charter. So I talked about that and how I was working to get that reestablished and going again. And then I submitted a draft of the charter that we're working on. And they accepted that, and that worked well. So that's what I used for my projects. Yes.
All right. For my change management and quality, I also selected quality improvement. and then risk assessment and reduction. Risk assessment here again, I did talk about providing ICARs and how we went to a facility, worked through the ICAR process, provided a comprehensive report, and then opportunities for training and education. So similar to what Sherry perhaps submitted along that one. For quality improvement, I actually utilize something that wasn't when I was necessarily in infection control. This was part of my respiratory work, and I really highlighted a nebulizer policy that I was able to help build and implement in the healthcare facility I was working in, and then how that got elevated to be utilized as the basis for higher level at with Sanford Health up to the enterprise team for nebulizer cleaning and dis. So that's what I've done. That advocacy is one I really struggled with and thought, do I really have a great item that fit in? And I went back and forth quite a bit. The one thing that I will say is I ended up going with influence. And with the influence, I again utilized the nebulizer policy, but talked about how the basis for what I had learned from the quality improvement program that we built really turned into growing this policy to something that was able to advance me to work with the enterprise level at Sanford Health, and then to let that be something that's even utilized, pieces and parts of it still with Good Sam today. So those are what I use for advocacy. One I want to highlight, I am not with Sanford Health anymore. And because of that, I didn't have access to things like data for the quality improvement project, or like the PDSA cycle posters that we had developed and things along that. So I had to create those. And you do not have to use the exact example for the evidence. I recreated different pieces of what was within those to submit for my evidence. So just keep that in mind. If you have to use something that maybe was pushing your 10-year limit of being utilized, you can build something if you don't have the exact documents, the exact items that you utilize for your projects as evidence.
And the next part is professionalism, and they have accountability and inclusivity. So you have to choose one of each of those. And for me, in the accountability section, I did advancing the profession. And for me, that was going back to my wound care experience and knowledge. I developed a wound care toolkit that was put out nationally by HHQI and was actually featured at a CMS conference, national conference, when I worked with a Great Plains Quin. And so I used that document as proof of what I did. So kind of talked about how you assess wounds, how you measure them, different dressing selections, and that kind of thing. So that's what I did for advancing the profession. And the inclusive, I can't even say that word, inclusivity. I used implementation. And for that one, I talked about how I worked with a environmental service group, and we did a lot of one-on-one teaching and education, and developed a kind of a worksheet where I went in for 3 visits, I believe, and just worked with EVS on infection control practices, and we set up like a little test and all of that. So I submitted those documents as proof of my evidence of why that was important. Jess?
And for mine, for accountability, I also chose advancing the profession. With that, I utilized and talked about as the president of SEDACU, working with our SEDACU board last spring to really put on the collaborative conference for the infection prevention community with the quality professionals. So that was what I submitted. And for my piece of evidence, I really just submitted the conference flyer for that. And that was accepted as a piece of evidence and utilized for mine. For inclusivity, I did also talk about training for EVS, but I also included we were fortunate and we were able to go to a tribal long-term care facility and provide training and education for their EVS team on multiple occasions. So I really talked about that and not only hitting both the EVS area, where maybe they don't get the most specialized training and dedicated time, but also being able to work with the Native American population. So that's what I utilize for my piece on that one.
And the last one was just professional development. You could choose one of two of these. What I chose was leading the advancing the profession. And what I chose is how we got this APIC chapter started from the 3 or 4 years ago when it was just a thought and it was still SDICC. And some of you remember Kip Stahl and how his vision was to establish a South Dakota APIC chapter. And so what I use as my evidence for this one is some PowerPoint slides that we did and that I helped coordinate. So that's what I did for this one. I agree with Jess. Just really think about where your ideas fit best. And there are a lot of them. You don't have to have anything grandiose to submit. So keep that in mind. I'm sure you guys all have a ton of things you can submit.
Absolutely. And for my piece on the professional development, I also did the professional slash leadership development and really talked about involvement throughout the state on boards, whether that's the respiratory board, the quality board, or the APIC chapter. And then also talked about advancing my career from respiratory to a master's degree, and then obtaining my certification for infection control and the CPHQ. So really intertwined quite a few pieces into that one piece that I submitted and wrote on. And then for my actual piece, I submitted just my CPHQ certificate on that. So, and they did accept that as well. So just something to keep in mind as you're advancing. And it even talks about in the descriptions, like some of those things are really highlighting what could be included for your evidence. When we were at the national conference last month, they really highlighted that those that pass the certification or the portfolio-based assessment really included what their impact was and why it mattered in their rationale. So keep that in the back of your mind. What was my impact? What did I do that made an impact? And why did that work matter? Put that in your rationale if you can. And then any data that supports that. That was another big piece that the civic leaders had talked about at the presentation they gave at National APIC. So if you're thinking about that, think about pieces of that that you can include when you're doing your rationales or for your pieces of evidence.
The only other thing I would add to that is they don't really want to see your resume because anybody can put anything on your resume. If you're thinking that you've got this great resume, I would not use that because that's not rationale of what you did. They want to know what you did, how you accomplished it, the steps that it took. So keep that in mind when you're doing that. The other thing I would encourage you to do is if you're thinking about this, they have some sessions where you can talk to the civic members that have passed their ALCIP. And I listened to several of them a couple times because they had different speakers on there and got ideas of what I could use and what not to do and that kind of thing. So strongly encourage you to get on those and listen to them as they offer them.
Absolutely. And really, the reason we decided today to kind of go over what we submitted for our portfolio is because I was really kind of hesitant to do this. I wasn't really feeling like maybe I had done enough to meet the requirements. But after Sherry kind of said, well, this is what I'm doing, this is what I, it really helped spur some thoughts like, oh, yeah, I did this and I did that. So that's why we wanted to tell you guys what we submitted, hoping that maybe it would give you some ideas of work that you had done in the past or something that could relate that maybe you hadn't thought of. Pull in all areas of your experiences. You would be shocked how they relate to infection control. And like I said, at the time I was doing respiratory therapy work, I certainly wasn't thinking I was doing IP work also, but in reality, it truly was. So, the other thing, and we just have it on the slide here, is when you pass your ALCIP portfolio, that does restart all of your certifications for 5 years. So now like my long-term care CIP certification recertify date is 5 years from when we received this ALCIP.
Right. Thank you, Jess and Sherry, for sharing your experience. All right, so now everybody's certified, and we're going to talk a little bit about recertification. So you have two options for recertification. You can recertify by exam if you are a crazy person who loves to take tests, which is essentially you are retaking the original exam via a web-based email, or excuse me, a web-based exam that is emailed to you. Whatever year that your certification expires, you have to take it by December 31st of that year. Or you can recertify by continuing education credits. That is a minimum of 40 IPUs, infection prevention units, in accredited content, which is relevant to infection prevention and control and matches the current domains. So if you are certified and you are coming up or curious about your recertification, if you go to Civic and you go under recertify, there is an IPU manual. And then there's also a very, very helpful webinar that's hosted by APIC, and it's called Maintaining Your Civic Certification Through Infection Prevention Units. And it takes you through what you need to do. So you have 5 years to do the recertification through the IPU. Again, minimum of 40 units. And you have to cover at least six domains in these eight categories, which are listed in front of you. The really nice part about it is that what I've always done is when I was getting recertified is I just had a folder in my on my computer, and anytime I spoke or did a presentation or was part of a board like APIC, I got verification of it, and kept it all in that folder. What I didn't do a great job was making sure that I had at least six of the domains. But what I'm doing this time around is I actually go to Civic and I log in, and what I'm doing is as I go, I am uploading that verification that I attended the annual conference from APIC South Dakota, how many IPUs that was worth, and then I'm also putting in what categories we are covering. So, management and communication, I'm covered on that, education and research, environment of care. And then that way I keep checking back and saying, okay, I'm missing these different domains and I need to find an education that will cover that. So either way is good, but it definitely helps if you are going on Civic and keeping track of it through there. I always, when I recertified, I made sure that I put in more IPUs than necessary, and I had more that were available just in case, you know, I lost an email or I didn't have a certificate or what have you. For long-term care, we have a lot of long-term care infection preventionists. Long-term care is very similar. It's achieved through the 5 years by earning a minimum of 40 units within seven of the nine domains. So again, you can see the different domains, the nine categories you need, that you need. Five of the required 40 must be within the long-term care setting. So they have to be long-term care specific. It can take, just so you know, it can take 30 days from this when you submit to receive the word back that you were approved. It also has to be submitted by October 31st of your recertification year. And this is a copy of the IPU guide. It is incredibly helpful to look at one, the number of IPUs that you are given. If there is a maximum that you can attain, and then they give examples. So, online, print, or live format education, there's different ones. There's the local, national, or international conferences or workshops, academic education, publications, if you are published. And then if a presentation, if you are speaking, if you're delivering a webinar, I know for a lot of people, this can be very very hard to do. You don't feel like you're an expert in something, but we all have a lot to give. So just speaking at an APIC chapter event is worth two IPUs for 1 hour presentation. So keep that in mind. Participation in a professional organization, as a committee member or volunteer leadership within the healthcare industry. So that might be within your facility. It might be, I don't know, on APIC South Dakota, on one of our on our board. Participation in a mentorship program. So if you have something within your facility or within your organization, teaching, and then research. So again, this is very, very helpful when you're looking at what counts and what doesn't, how many IPUs that you can get. All right. And Sherry, Jess, do you want to talk about the APIC scholarship and grant opportunities?
Yeah, I sure can. I am sorry. There are several scholarships that APIC offers throughout the year available. One of them that was new last year was the Critical Access Hospital Scholarship. That really allows for critical access to have multiple individuals within their organization to apply for this opportunity and then work towards certification. So that is a great scholarship opportunity available if you're a critical access hospital and want to get multiple people within your facility involved. There's also the APIC Scholarship Program, which I was awarded that this year. So I am currently also working on studying for my CIC. I don't have that one yet and want to have that certification as well. With this scholarship program, the opportunity to apply will be coming open real shortly, and we will share that out as soon as we get that information. And then if you receive it, you'll be notified in October, and then November 1st is when your year to take your examination starts. With that, you get reimbursement for the CIC if you pass it. You also get the full program that is available for studying, which is a great program if you have the option to spend quite a bit of money to obtain that, but it works through each module and has questions and answers, those type of things to really help you get a good understanding of each section for the CIC. So those are two of them that are coming up. Do we have a couple more on the next slide?
No,
Maybe
these
not.
are the only ones. Yep, these are the only ones that were
Okay.
on the APIC, or excuse me, the CBIC website.
Okay, there is one other one. I know we do have one person in the running for it in South Dakota right now, just because I was able to provide a letter of reference. But APIC does also have a leadership development opportunity that should be coming out again. So we will share that out also. That really allows you to work through and obtain a certification and enhance your leadership skills, those type of things.
Hey, thank you. These are wonderful opportunities if, especially if you work at a facility that may not support, monetarily support you becoming certified, but that is something that is important to you. Certainly reach out about those scholarship opportunities, and apply for them. I always kind of say the worst they can say is no, and then you're right back where you started. So it looks like we have about eight people who are looking at a study group, which is wonderful. We will help coordinate that so that you all can get each other's email addresses and start to talk about times, and that sort of thing. Is there anyone right now just want to, you can put it into the chat, or if you have a question, if you have a specific question on certification that we can answer for you right now, there is a lot of knowledge on this Zoom call. So if you have a specific question about certification, please put it in the chat. We are happy to answer it live. And I know we have just a few minutes here, but we'll give it a minute.
I would just add for those that are studying for your CIC, really get that manual and know the rationales. If you know the rationales, you might see that rationale in another question later. So really spend time knowing that rationale. I went through that book over and over again. The other thing I did is Yep, that certification study guide. I had bought a lot of other books and they were confusing to me, so I would not waste your money. I would stick with these that they use. The other thing is the Florida CIC group that really helped me a lot. I would put it on and just rewatch them over and over again as I was walking with my headphones, or if I was driving, I would be listening to them. And it's amazing how much you actually retain and would see later on in a test. The other thing is, I put in there the sterile guy. I did not have much experience in SPD or sterilization, and I found this site, and it was just very helped me learn about the process, how it works. So I just thought I would add that in.
And I did put those into the chat as well. Certainly the APIC text. I don't even know if you can get the books anymore. I think it's all online now. But the APIC text is something that is very helpful when you are going through your certification. All right. Well, I don't see any specific questions in the chat. We appreciate everyone that joined. We had a very nice group today. Please remember, I think an email was just sent out of all the different educational opportunities that are available to you right now in South Dakota. There are quite a few that we had sent out, including today's certification presentation. There's July 22nd is the Avera Day of Sharing. On July 24th, there is a approach to urinary tract infections from Dr. Keegan and Associates. On September 9th to 11th, there is a Chest Train the Trainer event that will be in Brookings that's sponsored by AHE. That's great for your environmental services staff. And then October 2nd and 3rd, there is the APIC South Dakota Annual Educational Conference. We have a really wonderful lineup of different presenters. Over that day and a half, please make plans to join us in Sioux Falls for that conference. So we appreciate everyone joining today. Thank you for your time, and we hope that this presentation was helpful to you. Bunny, I'm not sure how to stop
I'm gonna
recording.
I'm gonna stop it right now.